Blog Talk Radio.
Like a Monday, even though it's not a Monday, it is a Thursday, which means there are 2 days left to deliver the news for you, and there's a lot of it. Oh goodness, is there a lot of it. So we haven't done a show in a while, so I got some catching up to do. I got to tell you guys about Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski and everything that's going on in regards to them and Trump. Oh, is that a wild story? Then we have North Korea and what's going on with them, and we have the Man Baby Chronicles, as I now call them. What Trump needs in order to visit our allies. This is some unbelievable stuff, and I'll give you some facts on how Big Pharma buys the government, some facts on our disappearing middle class. You don't want to miss it. We got a show that's jam-packed with substance. So, without further ado, let's get started here. I hope everybody enjoyed their July 4th. And let's kick it off with North Korea. North Korea successfully tested an intercontinental ballistic missile the other day. And the administration and the media, as a result of this, they're going absolutely nuts. So the argument now is that, well, North Korea has the ability to reach Alaska if they wanted to. And naturally, there were the belligerent comments coming out of North Korea where, you know, they said, this is for the American bastards or whatever. And I want to go ahead and show you this is just a small sample of it, but two of the media reactions. So look at this. This says, top American military commander in South Korea says U.S. forces are ready for war with Pyongyang. So that's the American military saying, okay, we'll go to war because you successfully tested an intercontinental ballistic missile. Now let me show you one more. Now you might say, well, the other one was the Wall Street Journal, so that's, you know, right-wing rag, and we don't take them seriously anyway. But here, take a look at the so-called liberal Atlantic. Can North Korea be stopped? And they have, you know, what appears to be the North Korean powerful military, you know, coming for you and your grandma. They're going to be marching down the streets of Nebraska any minute now. Look out. So whenever we talk about stories like this, I always have to make crystal clear up front. Guys, North Korea, it's a horrendous regime. There's no denying it. We've all seen the propaganda that comes out of North Korea, how they try to pretend that their dear leader doesn't shit. They say, you know, they talk about him like he's the most interesting man in the world, like the Dos Equis commercials, like he can solve a Rubik's Cube in under 5 minutes or whatever. He had 11 holes in one the first time he played golf. This is propaganda for both Kim Jong-un and Kim Jong-il, the previous dear leader. So it's basically an authoritarian dictatorship through and through. The entire country is a hostage crisis. I mean, they basically have, as the UN report outlined fairly recently, they have concentration camps there, hard labor camps. So when you look at a satellite at night, of North Korea and South Korea. North Korea is not lit up at all. It's pitch black. South Korea is totally lit up because one country's developed, the other one has just been held back by this brutal regime. So what I'm about to say is in no way me giving them a pass for how disastrous and scummy and crazy they've been against their own people. There's no doubt that Kim Jong-un is a menace against his people. But, dude, they're not going to attack the United States of America. It's amazing I even have to say this. They are a fucking gnat. They are a gnat. They can't even get the toilets to work, and we're afraid that they're going to start a war with us? But that's the thing. I don't think Washington is really afraid that they're going to start a war with us. And, by the way, Adam Johnson of FAIR made a great point. He said the U.S. basically invaded, toppled, and destroyed one of the three countries, was it three countries, I think, that made up the Axis of Evil. Iraq is the one that we obviously destroyed. I think they named Iran in the Axis of Evil, and North Korea. So, like, the fact that people, commentators in the United States of America, are, like, just shocked, like, oh, I cannot believe they would try to develop a missile that can attack us. Yeah, it's called a deterrent, dipshit. Now, again, they might be crazy against their own people, and they might have insane propaganda and all that stuff. But you don't think Kim Jong-un understands, like, yeah, if I so much as harm a hair follicle of the United States of America, they're just going to take us out. I mean, of course we would. We spend more than, what is it, the next 8, 9, 10 biggest militaries in the world combined? We have 800 military bases all around the world. Did you know at any given moment there are 100 special ops missions going on around the world, U.S. special ops? That's crazy, because we have a shadow war going on in Africa, and then we also have, of course, the 7 different interventions we're doing and 2 full-scale ground wars. And so we are by far and away the country that offensively attacks other countries. Now, whatever, you could say, well, I like that, or whatever, but that's a fact. Like, we're the ones who do that. And you're going to tell me that the gnat of a country that has, a GDP of a Pop-Tart, they're going to attack us? That's just not going to happen. That's not going to happen. And then furthermore, with all this regime change talk now that's going on, I don't trust any of the idiots in Washington right now. The neocons in the deep state who are steering the ship, Trump, who's outsourcing all these decisions to the neocons in the deep state, but also the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon. I mean, now there's nobody to even mildly press the brakes on the neocon agenda, which, yes, is regime change in Iran and regime change in North Korea, and just any regime that's even slightly hostile to us or not exactly on the page of the United States and our corporations, yes, they're going to want to go in there and topple them. So this is bad. I mean, this is real bad. And if we were to do something stupid and retaliate, the real risk you're running is not them attacking us. Because, by the way, it was a successful intercontinental ballistic missile test. Maybe. Maybe. Maybe not. You know? They say, oh, well, we have the evidence that it would be. Look, they're a comical regime, so it's not beyond them to, find a way to stage it where it looks realistic, but it's not really happening or whatever. But if we were to do something to attempt regime change in North Korea, they're going to launch on Seoul, South Korea like that. I mean, that's the trick they have up their sleeve, is that if you try to do something to them, they immediately launch on Seoul, South Korea, and you can't have that. And, presidents who were more sober-minded kind of understood that, which is why virtually all the presidents kicked the North Korea issue down the road, because they're like, well, what am I going to do? What do you want me to do? What am I going to do? I'm going to fucking launch against them, and then they take out Seoul, South Korea? We got to try diplomacy through one avenue or another. And then also notice, it's always considered provocation when they do something. It's never considered provocation when we do something. So Trump has repeatedly gone on Twitter and baited North Korea. And so, they just talk about it out loud like it's nothing. Like, well, yeah, maybe we do regime change. is that not considered provocation? How is that not you threatening them? But it's always, you know, one of the things that is axiomatically true among corporate media in the U.S. and among politicians, you cannot question this, is that the United States actions, we will just assume, even if the evidence is all in the other direction, that it's defensive. Everything is defensive. Even we could do the most offensive thing ever, but we still spit, I thought it was that defensive. Right, we're doing seven different interventions right now. Right now. That's all defensive? That's defensive. Was Yemen about to attack us? Is that what was going to happen? Yemen was on the verge of going to Kentucky? I mean, come on, man. You can't be this stupid. Don't fall for the propaganda. Look, I despise North Korea. I despise them. The regime is horrific. It's hideous. It's as bad as it gets. But what are you going to do? You can't go topple them because then they take out Seoul, South Korea. And then furthermore, what happens after you topple them? Now people make the argument, well, anything that comes after could be better. Well, that was the same argument that was made about Saddam Hussein. Brutal dictator, horrendous, hideous. Oh, you're not in favor of taking him out? I guess you don't like freedom. Or I just don't want to invade countries that didn't attack us. Or that. And then what happened? In that situation, ISIS rose out of the works. Now, I'm not saying ISIS is going to come out of North Korea. They're not. But can you theoretically have a dictator who's just as brutal rise up? Well, yeah, because you have an entire population that was raised not even getting the concept of democracy or any of that stuff. They're raised to worship their demigod, man-baby dictator, and then what are you going to do? You're going to topple him, and then a Jeffersonian democracy is going to blossom out of nowhere? Or what, do you want the U.S. to do what we did in Japan? When, okay, World War II, we got rid of Imperial Japan, and then what, we occupied them. The U.S. had to occupy Japan for a significant amount of time afterwards, and then like nurse them back to spend money, resources, and nurse them back to, you know, and in that case, being one of our allies. But that's, we're talking about over a decade-long project, a multi-billion, if not trillion-dollar endeavor. Do you want to do that? I don't want to fucking do that. We don't even have clean water in Flint, Michigan. You know, our infrastructure gets a grade of D+, and we're talking about rebuilding Pyongyang when we can't even rebuild Detroit? I mean, get the fuck out of here with this bullshit. I mean, they're so disconnected from the concerns and the needs of regular Americans. And here we go again, man. They're beating that war drum. They did it for Iraq. This is the same playbook over and over and over. And every single time, the bitch-ass politicians, Democrats and Republicans, all seem to get on the same page. Oh, well, I mean, look, we disagree on a lot, but we do agree Syria's Assad has to go, right? Right? Yeah, right. Big regime change. Oh, Syria, yeah, we gotta go. Oh, look, we disagree on a lot, but we do. I've got North Korea. I mean, they're the problem, right? Wall Street Journal. Oh, they did an article just flat out calling for a regime change. Unbelievable. And then again, The Atlantic with their cover. You have the so-called liberals and the conservatives and all in corporate media. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, we do agree on that one thing, right? More war. Oh, yeah, totally. More war is the one thing we totally agree on. Well, what about when the American people don't agree on that? And we don't, by the way. We do not. Only 17% of Americans still want to be in Afghanistan. And that was as of 2013. Today, nobody even does a poll on it. It's probably 9% of Americans that are like, yeah, stay in Afghanistan. And now we're going to add another one on top of the seven interventions we're doing, two full-scale wars, shadow war in Africa. We're just going to add another one. Yeah, just go ahead, add another one. It's not like we don't have people who don't have health care here or who are living on poverty wages. It's not like we don't have 600,000 homeless people, over 50,000 homeless veterans. And what does this government want to do? Create more veterans. Because they're planning to do something in North Korea. Man, this is horrendous. This is horrendous. They tested an intercontinental ballistic missile, allegedly successfully. We launch actual missiles every day. Every day. In at least seven different countries. Nobody looks at us and says, we got to go do a regime change against America. Does Iran? Yeah, Iran. We have to go do regime change. Russia, come on. Well, we're going to have to fire a Scud missile at the White House and do regime change. Why? I mean, you're unhinged. What are we going to do? You're firing actual missiles in seven different countries. But North Korea does a ballistic missile test, and we go, oh, God, come on. Oh, can North Korea be stopped? Oh, my goodness, can they be stopped? You know, they've done polls the world over. respected polling organizations in the U.S., Pew, Gallup, they've done worldwide polls, and they go, which country is the biggest threat to world peace? What do people say? Well, North Korea, obviously, right? Obviously, look at them. Look at that regime. What, are you kidding me? It's got to be Russia. It's got to be Russia. Oh, my God, Russian aggression. Oh, my God, Russian aggression. Or Pakistan, India, they both have nukes, and they've been at each other's throats on the verge of fighting forever. It's got to be them, right? Nope. The United States of America, when you poll actual people all around the world, number one threat to world peace by far. Number one country that's a threat to world peace by far. Now, we could, as smug Americans, we could just dismiss that and scoff. Please. Or we could actually not be idiots and, like, try to figure out why that's the case and then try to course correct. But when you have the military-industrial complex running your country, making the decisions, calling the shots, why would we expect anything different? Of course we're going to be viewed as the biggest threat. Because just tally up the invasions, tally up the body count post-World War II, and we see what's going on. So North Korea is horrific. They're terrible. They're disgusting. But no, we shouldn't do regime change and do another war and cost more lives and trillions of dollars and, put Seoul, South Korea on the line and all the problems. You open Pandora's box if you go down that road, but that looks like the road the neocons want to go down. Okay. Next. All right, we're going to do the Morning Joe story. Because this is important. Morning Joe discussed what's been going on behind the scenes in regards to President Trump. And this stuff is so crazy that it even shocked me. So it's a little long here, but it's well worth the listen. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss the implications of this.
Was planning to publish a negative article. I'll just read a quote. This year, top White House staff members warned that the National Enquirer was planning to publish a negative article about us unless we begged the president to have the story spiked. We ignored their desperate pleas. What exactly happened there, to the extent you're comfortable talking about it?
Well, I mean, I'm comfortable talking. I mean, I think we have to talk about it now because it explains the relationship and his really strange obsession with this show, and in particular, it's a really disturbing obsession with Mika. We got a call that, hey, the National Enquirer is going to run a negative story against you guys, and it was, Donald is friends with, the president is friends with the guy that runs the National Enquirer. And they said, if you call the president up and you apologize for your coverage, then he will pick up the phone and basically spike the story. I had, I will just say, three people at the very top of the administration calling me. And the response was like, are you kidding me? I don't know what they have. Run a story? I'm not going to do it. The calls kept coming and kept coming, and they were like, call. You need to call. Please call. So, come on, Joe. Just pick up the phone and call him. It's blackmail.
And let me explain what they were threatening. They were calling my children. They were calling close friends.
You're talking about the National Enquirer. No.
And they were pinning the story on my ex-husband, who would absolutely never do that. So I knew immediately it was a lie and that they had nothing. And these calls persisted for quite some time. And then Joe had the conversations that he had with the White House where they said, oh, this could go away.
So I just want to be very clear here.
Well,
the National Enquirer is harassing your children, your daughters, who are teenagers.
Yeah. And,
then Joe, in turn, is getting calls from the White House.
By the way,
they're also, I was at Mika's house for a few minutes and came out, and there was a guy in a van that was staked out there watching. It was clear that he was from a tabloid, and he started asking questions. And then after all this started happening, that's when we started getting calls from the White House saying, if you call, need to call the president, and we'll
And our response, talking to my ex-husband, talking to Joe, talking to my kids, was, screw it, let him run it. Just go ahead and run it.
By the way, they ended up writing something, and they interviewed a guy who said, I seen him there for about a year. He comes in, he buys about, three six-packs of beer a week here in my store. I've never bought a beer. You can check it out. I'll be Gary Hart here. Follow me around. I've never bought a beer in my life. From a convenience store, from a bar, anywhere.
I don't want to talk about tweets anymore. What you just said is one of the most frightening things I've ever heard.
So this is what we got.
Basically that this story is going to run unless you grovel to the president, and then the president will kill the story.
But not just the story run. We will stop harassing your children if you grovel to the president.
And what makes it even worse for them is Donald Trump called me during the campaign and bragged about his friend who ran the National Enquirer. Have you seen the Ben Carson story? Have you seen the Ben Carson story? Have you seen that story in the Enquirer? And then he would talk about it. Did they do the JFK story too? I don't know if they did the JFK story too, but there were all these stories that were planted in the National Enquirer for people that Donald Trump wanted to attack. And then he would talk about it on the campaign trail. So when we heard it, he said, so we've gone from campaign mode to now trying to attack us. And, of course, go ahead. We were like...
The Ted Cruz JFK story was the National Enquirer. His father was involved somehow.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a fan of Joe Scarborough, but the level of detail in that story leads me to believe he's telling the truth. And that means Trump is even more loathsome than I thought. Because what it shows is he's so petty and vindictive and wrapped up in personal issues that he really is intellectually on the maturity level of a high school bully. Like, think that's how he's spending his time. And then the thing about the Enquirer, too. Wow. So in other words, one of Trump's close friends runs the Enquirer, and Trump just gets whatever stories he wants planted in the Enquirer. So during the campaign, he made up stories about, one of them was Ted Cruz's dad assassinated JFK. And he mentioned that on the campaign trail. And Trump in his classic, I said it, but I didn't really say it style. So, he touches on it, and he was referencing that story. But the story was in the Enquirer, who's his friend runs it, who he probably just planted that story, and then he spoke about the story he planted. I mean, this is taking trolling to a level I thought unattainable. And then there was the Ben Carson, so there was a bunch of stories about Ben Carson, but one of them was just this weird story about how, and I think we covered it, I think I covered it, so I was duped by it, about how he he left after the Iowa caucus, instead of going directly to New Hampshire, which he had to go home to get some clothes or something. And everybody was laughing at him, look at this fucking idiot. He's running for president. This is when it's crunch time and you got to campaign hard. And you're fucking home for, you forgot clothes? The fuck is that? That was just one of the stories. There were a few stories planted about Ben Carson, apparently. So here's a guy who, he is a manipulator on an insane level. And then also on top of being a manipulator, because he plants the stories and he talks about the stories he plants, he's just a liar. He's doing this. He's pulling the fucking puppet strings behind the scenes. And then he acts like he's a straight shooter. What, me? No, Joe, look, I'm just trying to do you a favor, Joe. I'm just trying to get the story that's negative about you and Mika killed from the National Enquirer, and I'd love to get that story killed, but first you got to come kiss my fucking ring and kiss my feet and tell me how great I am and tell me how tremendous I am and apologize for how unfairly you've treated me. Guys, this is the most powerful man on earth, and this is how he's acting. This is the most powerful man on earth. I don't even want the most powerful man on earth to give a shit about personal issues on any level. I want that person to be totally zoned in on policy and actually helping regular people and, you know, pushing for things that make sense. Medicare for all, free college, living wage, end the wars. Here we have a guy, he's just utterly empty and vacuous. There's nothing there. There's no there. There's no core there. And he's outsourcing all the policy to, I don't know, who the fuck, economic policy, Goldman Sachs. I got you guys in my administration. You do that. Military, where's Mattis? Mattis, you do that. What are we talking about here? Tremendous, believe me. Now, me, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, start feuds with cable news hosts, which, by the way, reports are he watches up to 6 hours a day of cable news. Wow. He's got all that time? I'm a fucking YouTube host. I don't have that time. I don't have anywhere near that amount of time. So he's starting beef with cable news hosts and then trying to get stories planted about them and fucking blackmailing them and I can get it killed, but you just got to come kiss my ring. And the stories are made up. They're just made up stories. He's a shameless liar and a scumbag and a cretin. Like, he really is. I hate making character arguments like, oh, you know, he's unfit. He doesn't have the character to be in office. Because what does that even mean? Like, what are you saying? Well, Trump actually doesn't have the character to be in office. He just doesn't. I mean, this guy is just off the fucking reservation. He's just gone. He's 71 years old. This is a 71-year-old man. This is how he acts. Everybody I know wasn't this petty and vindictive when they were in high school, when people are the most petty and vindictive. But jeez, man. Oh, my goodness. Wow. This is how he spends his time. And the irony, final point, the irony. What does this guy do anytime he sees a story he doesn't like? Fake news! Fake news! That's fake news! Fake news! Fake news! You just learned right now. Whenever he streams fake news, it's because it's projection. He's the one that's guilty of pushing fake news quite directly. So he does fake news all the time, so anytime he sees something that's slightly negative about him, it's projection. Oh, fake news, they just plant the negative stories about me because they're liars and they're unscrupulous. Well, actually, you're a liar and you're unscrupulous and you plant fake stories about people. So guilty conscience and it leaks out. Whatever he accuses other people of doing, he's usually doing. Okay. All right, let me take a quick break. When we come back, I got a lot more for you, man. We're going to talk about the Man Baby Chronicles. Wait until you hear what's going on in Poland with Trump's visit, and then how Big Pharma controls the government. Stay right there. You don't want to miss any of it. We will be right back.
They want to know what's going on in the side.
Power. Power.
Just to keep my name about your mind.
Huh? Gucci is your Logan, cause that motherfucker crook blue suit. Bentley and the Ford is a woo too. And I know two Jews eat a cake like it's fast food. I'm from the T-Rex, only rumors cause life's cruel. My jewels so cold that you might get the slight flu. Birds out, barrel looking down in the little dude. And if I had two pussies, either I'd rob you. Take it off, 24 just like car. Shows do my brain bitch go brother chill like my hoes do. These fuckers say they coming but who are cooking some soul food. I'm out, push a house and I pull up with a trunk full. Radio.
Balls with a child, nigga, don't even cry. Balls with your balls with your homies die. Boy, there's a little that one in the sky. Don't cry, let the dubs do that. When the guns go black, now that's what we call the pop like James Dad. A nigga kicked back at the house with a clip lock on. Got an ounce on the couch floor, back like a jaw open. We all smoking, and some of us even taking shots going in. And Jello, Tito's right in the seat, that ground of the angel flag. My G, we know what's going on in the side. They wanna know what's going on in the side. In the side. In the side. In the side. Now tell that bitch to keep my name up out your mind.
Jump into the Man Baby Chronicles. I have a brand new story for you from the Man Baby Chronicles. Listen to this. Earlier this year, a report out of the UK claimed that President Donald Trump was reluctant to visit America's biggest ally because he feared he'd be greeted with angry protesters. Now, reports out of Poland suggest that the Polish government has figured out a way to make Trump feel comfortable in their country by busing in people to cheer for him. According to the Associated Press, Polish news agencies are reporting that the Polish government promised the White House a reception of cheering crowds as part of its invitation to the president and is going so far as to bus in groups from the provinces to hear Trump's speech. Wow. Okay, I need everybody to understand something. This isn't hyperbole, this is just straightforward fact. This is historical knowledge. Any student of history understands this. This is what authoritarian governments do. Like, they need, you have these weak, insecure leaders who want to feel macho and strong, so they do AstroTurf. Okay, bring in my biggest supporters, and we're only going to allow in my biggest supporters, and, like, I'm going to cheer and stuff, and, excuse me, they're going to cheer and stuff while I give my shitty speech. So, in other words, you know, President Free Speech Guy is running to his safe space. I always find it hilarious that there are people on the right who love screaming, free speech, free expression. But when it comes down to it, they're little snowflakes. I mean, that's what this is. I can't take you protesting me. He literally was like, yeah, Britain, I don't think I want to go because people are going to protest me. I don't want to be protested. What happened? I thought you were the tough, you know, tough guys who believe in the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and love free speech and free expression. Well, people actually exercise it and they're against you all of a sudden. I don't want to go. You should be like Poland and bus in people who are going to cheer for me, who you know are going to cheer for me. Like, you don't... Wouldn't a normal person find that, like, ridiculous and find it like you're cheating? You know, like, oh, yeah, just get only my supporters and allow them. That's why I call this the Man Baby Chronicles. That's a man baby. That's how a man baby acts. You know? He's the president of the United States, most powerful man in the world. And this is This is what he's concerned about. That's embarrassing, man. Like, that's embarrassing. That's something, like, we should be ashamed. I'm ashamed. I mean, I didn't vote for the guy, and I fucking hate him, but that's, he represents our country, and he doesn't want to go anywhere where there might be free speech, where they are against him. He can't take criticism. Unfit. He really is. He really is, man. You know, and that's not saying other Republicans are better. They're not. Pence is a Kool-Aid drinking Christian fundamentalist, and there's a chance he does even more damage. But this is unique. This is unique snowflakery, where you don't want to visit places where they might protest you, and you're going to have other countries butt in supporters to cheer for you. He doesn't want to be triggered by their microaggressions. So he needs a safe space. Next. All right, let's talk a little bit about Big Pharma. There's an article by Fair Warning and the Center for Responsive Politics that breaks down how crony capitalism works when it comes to Big Pharma, and it's really illuminating. So here's what they say. When the Republican-controlled Congress approved a landmark program in 2003 to help seniors buy prescription drugs, it slapped on an unusual restriction. The federal government was barred from negotiating cheaper prices for those medicines. Instead, the job of holding down costs was outsourced to the insurance companies delivering the subsidized new coverage, known as Medicare Part D. The ban on government price bargaining, justified by supporters on free market grounds, has been derided by critics as a giant gift to the drug industry. Democratic lawmakers began introducing bills to free the government to use its vast purchasing power to negotiate better deals, even before former President George W. Bush signed the Part D law known as the Medicare Modernization Act, Orwellian name. All those measures over the last 13 years have failed, almost always without ever even getting a hearing, much less being brought up for a vote. All right, let me pause. That's insane. So, you have, by the way, it's not, they frame it like all the Democrats are the good guys, all the Republicans are the bad guys. That's not true. There's a lot of corporate Democrats who are on the side of Medicare and not being able to negotiate for better drug prices with Big Pharma, including Barack Obama. But there are some good Democrats, the ones who are not corporate Democrats, who propose these amendments. I think Bernie Sanders has done it a bunch of times. Well, he's an independent, but you know what I'm saying. And the amendments are, look, let's just allow Medicare to negotiate for better drug prices. We pay, they go on to give the specific numbers, and we might get to them in a little bit, but it's like 70 to 80% higher drug prices than other modern nations. And it's the same drug. We just pay higher because the insurance companies are legally allowed to price gouge us in this country. So you would think if our politicians, if our representatives were representing us, if our senators were looking out for our best interest, that's a no-brainer amendment. That's a no-brainer. Hey, here's an amendment that says Americans will pay lower prices for their drugs. That's basically what it is. Like, hey, should Americans pay lower prices for their drugs? And oftentimes, not only does it not pass, they don't even allow it up for a vote. That game, set, match, pound the gavel, it's over. Your government's not representing you. They're bought by Big Pharma, and they're representing Big Pharma. Because if they were representing us, that again, that's a no-brainer. You allow a vote on it, and it is unanimous that it passes. They don't even allow a vote on it in many instances. When they do allow a vote, it fails. But oftentimes, they don't even allow a vote on it to get cheaper drug prices for you. It's unconscionable. Okay, more. That's happened even though surveys have shown broad public support for the idea. For example, a Kaiser Family Foundation poll found last year that 93% of Democrats and 74% of Republicans favor letting the government negotiate Part D prescription drug prices. It seems an anomaly in a democracy that an idea that is immensely popular and calculated to save money for seniors, people with disabilities, and taxpayers gets no traction. But critics say it's no mystery, given the enormous financial influence of the drug industry, which rivals the insurance industry as the top spending lobbying machine in Washington. It has funneled $1.96 billion into lobbying in the nation's capital since the beginning of 2003 and in just 2015, and the first half of 2016 has spent the equivalent of $468,108 per member of Congress. God damn. The industry also is a major contributor to House and Senate campaigns. There are far more lobbyists in Washington working for drug manufacturers and wholesalers than there are members of Congress. Last year, the industry retained 894 lobbyists to influence the 535 members of Congress, along with staffers and regulators. From 2007 through 2009, there were more than two drug industry lobbyists for every member of Congress. For each of the last 13 years, more than 60% of the industry's drug lobbyists have been revolvers, that is, lobbyists who previously served in Congress or who worked as congressional aides or in other government jobs. That raises suspicions that lawmakers and regulators will go easy on the industry to avoid jeopardizing their chances of landing lucrative lobbying work after they leave office. This is a bunch of soulless cretins looking out for themselves and screwing over everybody in the country as a result of it. That's what this is. Narcissistic, soulless, immoral cretins. And let me be clear about something. It's more the system that's the problem. Because we have legalized the system that allows these campaign contributions, that allows the revolving door to happen. We need to get the money out of the system so you can't have this lobbying. It is illegal. Have politicians who can only raise money from the people, so they only represent the people, and make laws that eliminate the revolving door. It's human nature. When you give these people that out, and they're going to make more money when they go that path, they don't give a fuck. They're going to screw over everybody because they're looking out for their own. This is as sick as it gets, man. This is as sick as it gets. So, look, I hate to beat a dead horse here, but the answer is Justice Democrats. I mean, we're running political candidates who, they don't take any corporate money. They don't take any lobbyist money. So we've made the incentive structure one that they only raise from the people, so they only represent the people. And if you want to know exactly what they stand for, go read our platform, justicedemocrats.com/platform. But we are at a permanent institutional disadvantage because our opponents can just go and get some checks from lobbyists, get some checks from billionaires, get some checks from corporations, do these, you know, giant fundraisers where they take gargantuan amounts of money. They have super PACs. And so we're the alternative to that, but you have to understand that we need a lot of small money contributions. So a lot of people need to give a little bit in order for our candidates to be successful. By the way, you can go to justicedemocrats.com/donate if you want to be one of those people who's part of the solution. Excuse me. Or also, if you want to do it a different way, here at Secular Talk, we're doing it's a limited time thing. It's a short time thing. But we're doing a fundraising drive where we're doing Secular Talk shirts, and half the proceeds are going to Justice Democrats. So, you know, you can go check that out. It's booster.com/secular talk shirts if you're interested. Have the first generation shirts, the second generation shirts, and now the third generation shirts there, and you get to take your pick. So you could check that out if you'd like. I know I'm getting some myself. But we got to change this, man, because this is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, when I read this stuff, it makes my blood boil. It's in your face. And by the way, where's corporate media on this? Where the fuck are you? This is the real scandal. I mean, we could talk about Trump's tweets until we're blue in the face. Oh, my God. He did a wrestling tweet. And he had CNN's face when he did the clothesline on the person. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Dads, you're going to have more outrage for that than you're going to have for this. Our democracy is gone. They made the point in here. They're like, isn't it weird in a democracy you have something that, like, you know, the overwhelming majority of people favor and not even brought up for a vote? Well, that's right. It is weird, which means the conclusion is what? We're not functioning as a democracy. Studies have shown we function as an oligarchy, as a kleptocracy. Government of, by, and for the rich. Government of, by, and for the elite. Of, by, and for the corporations. Corporatocracy. what you want is, you know, that's not considered. Because if what you wanted was considered, we'd already have Medicare for All. We'd already have free college. We'd already have a living wage. We'd already end the wars. We'd already do an infrastructure deal. So we got to fight back. We can't just sit back and take it, because this has been going on for too long, and we need to be the ones to say, not on our watch. Okay. All right, now let's go to the Hill and talk about low bars. So the Hill is reporting that more Americans trust CNN than Trump. So here's what they say. A new online poll finds that Americans trust CNN, the Washington Post, and the New York Times more than President Trump, Axios reported Tuesday. But amid Trump's ongoing war against the press, trust is largely split among partisan lines, with 89% of Republicans viewing Trump as more trustworthy than CNN, while 91% of Democrats think the opposite. Among all adults, trust for CNN is 7 points ahead of Trump. Among independents, CNN wins by 15 points. So let me give you the overall breakdown here for CNN is this. 50% trust CNN, 43% trust Trump, and 7% say, I don't know. Excuse me. I have to take a sip of my drink because good googly moogly. Got something in my throat. Okay. So people are, like, happy about this and tweeting about it and cheering about it, and all the headlines are like, CNN more trustworthy than Trump. Yes. In other words, they're trying to use it as evidence of, like, well, our institutions are functioning very well. And it's just, Trump is an aberration. He's the problem. Before Trump came along, everything was hunky-dory. Moving right along, had no issues. And now Trump comes along, but thank goodness, brave CNN is, they're the ones who are keeping our democracy safe and intact and doing the right thing and fighting the good fight. But that's bullshit, man. And this is the very definition of a low bar. I mean, you did a poll, and it's only 50% that say CNN is more trustworthy than Trump, and 43% say Trump is more trustworthy. That, no, it should be 90-10. It should be 90%. Of course CNN is more trustworthy. 10%. Okay, Trump, that's the 10% in the country that's just, you know. They're silly people who are like religious fundamentalists who have low IQs. There, I said it. But look, bottom line is, CNN does such a shitty job that they only got 50% in a poll where you have the most obviously ridiculous president in U.S. history, or right up there, I should say. I mean, the guy wears a beaver on his head and looks like he does bronzer on his face and goes to the tanning salon as a 70-year-old man. You know, and he's a reality star buffoon, but famous for his pettiness and vindictiveness and braggadocio. Is that a word? I think that's a word. But CNN, the number one name in so-called news, only gets 50%. So they don't. This isn't a victory, guys. That's not a victory. CNN needs to up their game. They just spent a week fucking melting down over a Trump tweet where, it, you know, it's him, it's a gif of him back when it was WWF, I don't know if it was WWE or WWF at the time, but he was in it, and then he, like, clotheslined Vince McMahon, and there was a logo of CNN over Vince McMahon's face, and Trump tweeted it, like, yeah, I'm going after fake news, fraud news, CNN. And it was like, oh, you're encouraging violence against reporters, good sir. Now, let me be clear, Trump has actually done that in the past. He's done it, almost quite literally. But this is not an instance of that. This is him, like, fucking around, just tweeting a gif. Now, you could say it's juvenile and childish. It is. But people were making an argument, if anything happens to any reporter, it's on blood's on his hand. Pipe down, fuckface. There was a petition that came up, like, we must impeach now over this. It was a fucking wrestling tweet that made you come to that conclusion? The wrestling tweet. wasn't the fact that he signed a bill that only 6% of Americans support that gives away our internet privacy protections. Wasn't the executive order that allows coal companies to pollute the waterways. Wasn't increasing war in Syria and Afghanistan without going through Congress, just increasing war. Wasn't randomly dropping the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. Wasn't, in his first military act as president, approving a raid that killed a eight-year-old American girl. That, those things, what's the problem? I don't understand. So he signed a bill that said, for every one new regulation we have, we got to eliminate two regulations. Setting us up for another deregulation crisis, deregulates Wall Street out the wazoo, cuts taxes for the rich, outsources his economic plan to Goldman Sachs. The guy is a joke, and he's fucking up the country when it comes to policy, and you... Oh, wrestling twist! Oh, goodness me! I don't like that! I don't like playful tweets that have GIFs of the WWF. And by the way, it's fucking fake! It's fake wrestling! It is fake! Hello, it's fake! So anytime you say anything, oh, you're encouraging violence, you know what the response is going to be? Hey, jackass, do you not know that that's fake? That's fake wrestling? And he's baiting you, and it's working. It works when he baits you. That sounds gross, and it's somewhat sexual. They're cheering. There was a poll that came out during the election. Trust in mass media is at an all-time low. All-time low. And they're using this poll as like, see, CNN is more trustworthy than Trump. More trustworthy than a known con man who's a fraud, who did Trump University to steal, get their people's money away from them. They hired fucking known con men who had gone to jail for being con men to run Trump University. The low bar is unbelievable. But you know what? I don't know. We shouldn't even be surprised. They have Don Lemon talking about, well, maybe the plane that disappeared went into a black hole. Do you guys trust us? Are we a good news outlet? Wolf Blitzer did a segment with Rand Paul. Rand Paul was proposing some sort of bill to stop arming Saudi Arabia because they're massacring women and children in Yemen. So Rand Paul's talking about it. Wolf Blitzer says, but Rand, what about all the jobs? Wouldn't the profits of the defense contractors be hurt if we pass your legislation? This is CNN. That's CNN. They abuse breaking news like nobody. They did breaking news. Titanic sank 102 years ago today. That was a breaking news segment they had a few years back. Do you believe that? They're a joke, man. They're a joke. And they're using this as a victory. We're more trustworthy than that guy, the least trustworthy man on planet Earth. Look, I shouldn't even be doing these segments. If I was just a selfish, narcissistic prick, I wouldn't even be doing these segments. Because, you know, we're the solution. So they helped me. Me prodding them to go in the right direction, if they were to actually listen, which they're not. But, like, that would hurt me. Because independent media is now the alternative. Now, there's a lot of things online, of course, that's bullshit. I mean, fucking Alex Jones is in this place. You know, he just had a guy on saying NASA is running a child slave colony on Mars. So you're going to get that. You're going to get the fucking Sandy Hook is a hoax. You're going to global warming denialism. You're going to get that online too. But there are good independent new media outlets, and I like to think we're one of them. And this is why our numbers keep increasing and theirs keep decreasing. So, and by the way, yes, our funding has been slashed tremendously. At one point, we were on a blacklist because of YouTube apocalypse, and we made nothing. About 500,000 views in a day, made nothing. Now we're off of the blacklist, but we still had a giant cut to our revenue. And word through the grapevine is that it's going to get worse. So you guys really saved the show. I don't think a lot of you realize that and understand that. But and you did it through Patreon. But that's the model of the future for independent media and new media. And by the way, if you're so inclined, which, you know, this means the world, you have no idea, patreon.com/secular talk, just $2 a month is really all we ask. It's like you're buying me a cup of coffee every month, basically. And that means the world. And we're trying to do it the grassroots model. So fund through the grassroots, continue with the same quality show, pump out the same amount of content. We change the funding structure up where you guys are the primary funders of the show. So patreon.com/secular talk, there's a few options. $2 a month, $5 and $7, I think, if you want to go nuts and do $7 a month. But you guys saved the show. I love you for that. And it means the world to me. And look, I can't say, like, I don't blame you for saving the show because this is the alternative. People who brag about only 50% of Americans saying, yeah, they're more trustworthy than this obvious, ridiculous con man and huckster. The fact that that's not 90-10 is shameful, and CNN needs to look in the mirror. Okay. All right, let me do one more quick one, and then we'll take our final break. Pew did some research on the middle class in various industrialized countries, and let's just say the U.S. isn't doing very well. Middle class fortunes in Western Europe from 1991 to 2010, the middle class expands in France, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom, but, as in the United States, shrinks in Germany, Italy, and Spain. Middle class, by the way, in this is defined as adults living in households with disposable incomes ranging from two-thirds to double the national median disposable household income. So, look, you might have some disagreements with their definition of middle class. I do. But that I'm just saying that's their criteria. That's what they're using to say this person's middle class or this person is not. I want to read it to you one more time. Middle class adults live in households with disposable incomes ranging from two-thirds to double the national median disposable household income. Okay, so with that being said, let's take a look. The shares of adults living in middle-income households fell in many countries in Western Europe. And then it says percentage of adults living in middle-income households in 1991 and 2010. So you have – it is falling. Look, you see it there. You know, it's going from – it's hard to tell exactly which is which here, but I think that's Finland, 82% to 75%. Germany went from 79% to 72% living in the middle class. Denmark looks like it went from 80 to 80, no? So that's staying the same. You can see it there. I don't need to go through all of it. It's a little hard to tell because the lines are crossing each other, but more or less you have slight drops in Norway, Denmark, Luxembourg, Finland, and Germany in terms of the percentage that's middle class. Italy went from 69% to 67% in the middle class. Spain, 69% to 64%. And the U.S., look at that, already lower by far in 1991, 62% to 59%. So we have fewer people in the middle class than in Spain, Italy, Germany, Finland, Luxembourg, Denmark, Norway. And we have fewer than in the UK, Ireland, France, and the Netherlands. And by the way, their middle class numbers have gone up from 91 to 2010. By the way, the fact that any decrease from 91 to 2010 is abysmal, and that's a direct side effect of neoliberalism. But, okay, look at that. 60% to 69% in Ireland went to the middle class, 61% to 67% in the UK, 72% to 74% in France, 76% to 79% in the Netherlands. Look, man, I think the biggest difference probably between all the other countries and us here, well, I mean, though a lot of the other countries are social democracies, so you're going to have more people in the middle class when certain things are off the table, like education and healthcare. People don't have to worry about those bills because it comes directly out of their taxes in many of those places. So that's one reason why more people would be considered middle class. They also have stronger unions. But the other places aren't as corrupted by money and politics either. I mean, we have just a corporatocracy and oligarchy through and through. Various studies have pointed that out. So what this tells me, what this study tells me is that the U.S. isn't number one at all. In fact, we seem to be at the bottom when it comes to the American dream. The American dream, the idea of social mobility, starting at a lower class, working your way up in the next generation. So starting lower class, hey, I made it into the middle class. That's the American dream. We went from 62% of people in the middle class to 59% of people in the middle class. And by the way, I still disagree with their definition of middle class. But others, you know, they're 60-some-odd percent, 70-some-odd percent, 80-some-odd percent in the middle class, in the actual social democracies. Whereas we are more right-wing on the spectrum, and look at that, fewer people in the middle class. What's crazy is we know the answers. We just don't. Our government is bought, and they don't want to do it because they don't give a fuck about us. We would have more people in the middle class if we had free health care, if we had free college, if we had a living wage, if we had stronger unions, if we stopped doing all this war overseas for no goddamn reason. Those are the answers. You want a thriving middle class? That's what you do. But they don't do it because they're bought. They're bought by various special interests. Corporations, lobbyists, billionaires, military-industrial complex. So, and by the way, Canada isn't included on this, but Canada, there was a story we covered maybe a year or two ago that said that Canada beats America now in the American dream. Their social mobility numbers, economic mobility numbers, are higher than ours. So you're more likely to start from a lower position and get into a higher position, a higher class, higher on the economic ladder in Canada than you are in the U.S. That's sad, and it's really, really depressing. And we got to fight back, and we got to change it, because this is unsustainable. And I feel like a lot of people don't even know. They're still coasting off, you know, like it's the fucking 1950s. In that, we're number one manufacturing hub of the world and, like, strongest middle class. Except not. It's one of the weakest middle classes. According to this, the weakest middle class in all the industrialized world. So there's something to think about. Okay. Take a final break when we come back. Still got a bunch of stuff to get to. Democrats laughing at single payer. And a guy shooting off his dick. Oh, that's not funny, but I'm laughing. So I guess maybe it's a little funny. Okay, let's take a break, and we will be right back, guys.
Fresh girls, fresh girls. with the left, the left. You will think so, one bone drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
All right, y'all, we back.
You slap me with the left, the left.
And let's talk a little bit about how we're getting stabbed in the back by Democrats. Dick Gephardt is the former Democratic House Minority Leader, and he's also a Democratic superdelegate, and you're about to find out why his name is very appropriate. The Intercept got audio of him at the Centene Corporation Annual Investor Day Conference at the Pierre, which is a ritzy five-star hotel in New York City. Centene is a private health insurance company, by the way. And listen to what Gephardt had to say when he was asked about single-payer health care.
That's helpful. And then just a second question. You know, one of the sort of existential threats that I always think about in this business is just a single-payer system. And I know we've never gotten close on the Senate floor, but I guess in anyone's mind, I'm curious to get anyone's perspective, is there a scenario where, you know, this just isn't working, maybe there's another bill in it, you know, the HCA, and that doesn't work as well either. Is there a scenario where we're ever really contemplating a single-payer system in the U.S.?
Not in my lifetime. I'm pretty old, so there is no way you could pass single-payer in any intermediate future. And, you know, I'm giving my editorial comment. This is the greatest healthcare system in the world, bar none. If you got a real problem, you want to be in America. And if you look around the world where they have single payer, I think you will find, yeah, it covers more people, but they do not have the quality and they do not have the innovation that we get because of the involvement of the private sector in our healthcare system. And I think that will defeat single payer approaches now and in the future.
Hear, hear. Put me down as a grill with Leader Gephardt.
As usual. Haley and I are both in the middle on this one.
No, you're both in the corporate pockets on this one. At the end there, you heard Haley Barbour, former governor of Mississippi, chiming in to agree with a former Democratic leader. Isn't that love? Bipartisanship. We're bipartisan. We need bipartisanship in America. That's what we need. We need the Democrats and the Republicans to agree to fuck us over and help out corporations. That's the kind of bipartisanship you get. So beware the ridiculous calls for bipartisanship. We need the parties to come to the center. That's what we need, the center. This is only the center of corporate America. Nobody agrees with these guys. Now let's break down just the mountain of sheer horse shit that was spewed there. So first of all, to the point, wait, single payer. Look, the problem, we have the best system here is innovation. We have innovation because of the private sector, innovation. Except, no, most of our innovation comes from universities with government grants. Next time anybody tells you capitalism or the private marketplace is necessary for innovation, you say, hey, bitch, ever heard of NASA? Our universities do most of the medical research and come up with the technologies and medicine of the future. And then the for-profit corporations take credit for it. Oh, yes, even though this was made at a university with a government grant, we shall now take credit for it. So he's just factually wrong on that. And then when he said, well, this is the best system in the world, bar none. For you, dick. For you. For the richest of the rich, sure. That's why, you know, Saudi princes come here. By the way, isn't it great? Saudi princes, the head of terror states, come here. Oh, that's lovely. They come here because for the top 0.01%, man, do they get some banging care. But everybody else, no. No, they do not. They cover more people. They get better prices and better outcomes. In single-payer countries, you know, it's true. Sometimes for elective procedures, you got to wait. No, that sucks. This thing you don't need that you're going to get, I mean, You got to wait a little bit for that. Oh, rats. In the U.S., you know, we ration care too, but we don't ration it based on need like they do in single-payer countries. We ration it based on the size of your wallet. They do a wallet biopsy. That's not my term. That, you know, somebody who's in the industry said, yeah, we do a wallet biopsy. And we look, oh, what kind of insurance do they have? How much money do they have? Okay. Well, they can get the good care. Other than that, you're going to have, no, sorry, you're not going to get it. Okay. And then they say, well, there's no way you could pass single payer, like, in the near future. You don't say why, do you, though, Dick? The reason why is exactly what's happening right now at this dinner. Because the private health insurance companies have bought the politicians of both parties. That's why you can't get it in the near future. Because the current politicians are bought and owned by the industry. We need the younger generation to say, how about not? How about no? How about we don't have politicians bought by the industry? So they make decisions that are best for the American people. And then finally, I think the thing that pissed me off most there was actually something that the questioner said, because it's really telling, and they don't even realize what they're saying when they say it, but he said, you know, one of the existential threats I view. So what do you mean by that? What are existential threats to the current system? Well, what they mean is we'll be out of business if a single-payer system passes, to which I say, good. You're a for-profit, rapacious, gouging middleman that's completely and utterly unnecessary.
Yeah, but we got to keep them because we got to have jobs. Jobs are good.
When those jobs price gouge people so they either can't afford their health care, can't get their health care, or they go bankrupt, yeah, no. Your price gouging unnecessary middleman is exposed for what the fuck it is, a price gouging unnecessary middleman. So we can reduce costs, we can cover everybody, we can give people better care if we do a single-payer system. And yes, that is an existential threat to for-profit private health insurance companies, which is a great thing. Now, I'm not saying you ban them. You don't have to ban private health insurance companies. You can still have them legal, and if somebody wants to get some supplemental care for whatever, plastic surgery, you name it, that's fine. But primarily, we should have Medicare for all. And these guys are scared to death of it because then the gravy train stops and they can't keep getting rich off of your struggles. Okay. Next. Here's an astonishing fact for you. Kathy Griffin, reportedly interviewed by federal agents for more than an hour. They did it over her, what was supposed to be a comedy photo shoot. Now look, I don't think it was funny. I think it was rather tasteless. But that's also irrelevant to what the intent was. Really? Kathy Griffin is a threat? What do they think? Kathy Griffin's going to actually behead Donald Trump? Is that the concern? Kathy Griffin is, what's she going to do? She's going to do it herself? She's going to hire a hitman to kill the President of the United States? Kathy fucking Griffin? Kathy Griffin. Why do we have to be stupid? Why do people have to be dumb? This is the dumbest shit I've ever heard in my life. There's nothing better for federal agents to work on. You're afraid Kathy Griffin is going to assassinate the President of the United States based on a failed comedy photo shoot. By the way, she groveled afterwards like, I'm sorry, this did cross the line. I see how extreme it is now. At the time, I thought it might be funny, yada, yada. Oh, my God, this is so stupid. This strikes me. It's similar to, like, you know, how cops are, let's prosecute the drug war. Go after people who are, like, smoking weed on the corner, and we're being strong, tough guys, macho men here, keeping everybody safe, freedom and liberty, bro. That's what we're doing. Except you're not. You're just harassing people who actually are engaging in something that it should be under freedom and liberty. Like, you should have the right to put in your body what you want to put in your body. They're not hurting anybody else. So they're harassing people, and then meanwhile, you know, you got fucking murderers, people committing assault, rapists. That's hard. You got to, like, do investigative work, and it's a lot of book learning and reading and gathering evidence. Why can't we just go rough up some kids on the street smoking weed? That's what this shit is. We're federal agents. We're really serious people. Anyway, we'll be back. We got a high-value target, Kathy Griffin. We'll be right back. Who's next? You want to go after Carrot Top next? I heard he made an off-color joke in 1999. You want to go after him, you fucking little snowflake bitches? Look, here's the bottom line, and this goes especially for the people on the right who love to pretend like they're in favor of free speech. You don't get to say, like, oh, my God, left-wing pussies, politically correct pussies on college campuses. Get over it. Get over it. If somebody makes a joke, you got to get over it. Who cares? I mean, come on. What are you triggered by their microaggression, you snowflake? You don't get to say that and then the next sentence say, Kathy Griffin should be fired because she made a joke I didn't like. By the way, she did get fired. She lost her job on CNN. Congratulations. Where are the people who go, free speech, free speech, free speech, oh, come on, oh, I don't like what she did, but hey, I'm going to stand up for her right to do it because it was an off-color joke and it's free speech. You don't say that because you're fucking hypocrites. Because you're fucking hypocrites. And now the hysteria is so ridiculous, it got to the point where federal agents are investigating her over an obvious joke. I'm really supposed to believe for a split second that Kathy motherfucking Griffin is a threat to the President of the United States. Beyond parody. Okay, now, talk about Florida Man. I have a story here from Law News that's so silly that I didn't think it was real at first, but it is. Listen to this. A Florida man suffered a horrible and embarrassing injury when he sat in the driver's seat of his car right on top of his gun, shooting himself in the penis. At least, that's the story that Cedric Jelks gave to Shanika Roberts, the woman whose house he frantically ran into looking for help, police said. Roberts took Jelks to a local hospital where he had surgery done. She told police that Jelks had been sitting alone in his car on Friday when he shot himself, then ran into her bathroom after seeing the gunshot wound. She took him to get medical attention. Adding insult to injury, officers investigating the situation discovered that Jelks has a prior felony conviction, so he isn't allowed to have a gun in the first place. Now he could face a new charge of illegally possessing a firearm. I'm going to do something that's incredibly unlib-like right now, and I'm going to defend this guy, and I'm going to say, you know what? We can overlook the fact that he had an illegal firearm because shooting himself in the dick is punishment enough from now until the day he dies. So they don't go on to say, like, oh, hey, by the way, he got surgery and it was reattached or whatever the case. They don't say it. But let's just say whether or not it was reattached and it's fine or whether it's permanently off or whatever, if it's mangled permanently, all those are punishment enough for being the asshole former felon with the gun that's illegal. Like, that's a harsh punishment, dude. You shot your fucking dick off. So, prosecutors, what are you doing? The guy's, the amount of suffering he's already had, and you're going to go ahead and say, well, now we have to charge you. What are we going to do? You shoot illegal gun. I'm making history. The first time ever that somebody on the left argued for to go lightly on the guy who has the illegal gun. Because, goddamn. Ugh, this is rough. This punishment is enough. Leave the guy alone, man. He's going through a hard time. Okay. Now, go to China. How much time do I have left? 9 minutes, and I have two stories. See if we could squeeze them both in. Actually, I'm going to go to the story coming out of Egypt first because It's weirder and funnier, but also depressing.
Sheikh Abd al-Wahhab al-Maliki, however the fuck you pronounce that, is an Egyptian cleric, and he went on TV to talk about female circumcision. Female genital mutilation is what it is. And let's see what he had to say.
موضوع الختان أتحدث به مع حضراتكم طبيا ودينيا واقتصاديا وتاريخيا تعيروني سمعكم.
I forgot I have to read it for you guys because you're live. You don't speak you don't speak other languages. All right, here we go.
موضوع الختان
I will talk to you about female circumcision
طبيا
from the medical, religious, economic and historical perspectives.
وتاريخيا
So lend me your hearts and your ears. The discussion about female circumcision goes back a century. The first time this subject was debated extensively was in the past century. Who were the first to talk about it? The Jews. They do not want Islam or the Muslims to be pure, developed, and civilized. So they started talking about it. In the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, it is written, we must strive for the collapse of morals, so that it will be easier for us to dominate the world. They tell you that female circumcision causes infertility. Says who? How can female circumcision cause infertility? Egyptian women have it, yet they give birth more than anybody else in the world. Allah be praised. So how can this cause infertility? It is the uncircumcised women of Europe who are infertile. Allah be praised. Are there any economic benefits of female circumcision? Yes! What are the economic benefits of female circumcision? It's a preventative medical measure. Someone who is uncircumcised will be afflicted with many serious diseases, which we will discuss later, Allah willing. Someone who contracts one of these diseases must spend money, and the state must spend money on his treatment, and so on. But we can save all this money and direct it elsewhere, and that's it.
Man, I love that guy's shit-eating grin at the end of it. It's almost like he knows he's trolling you. He's like, I sound so fucking stupid right now, don't I? Here's my smile. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. Everything he said was wrong. There was not a single point there that was correct. First of all, I love how he starts with a heavy dose of anti-Semitism. He's like, and you know who doesn't want us to do the female genital mutilation? The Jews. So obviously we got to do it because, I mean, come on, the Jews. They're Jews. Hello. And then he makes up some bullshit about how, yeah, you know, it's like healthier or something. And like, you know, they won't like get diseases. Yeah, that's it. They won't get diseases. And also the infertility or whatever. He said women of Europe are infertile because they're not genitally mutilated. Pretty sure my mom was not genitally mutilated, and yet I'm here somehow. So how does that work exactly? Yeah, that's just, I can't even believe I'm like bothering to rebut this guy's arguments. And then the best point was, there are economic benefits. Oh, well, thank you. As if that's a trump card. I mean, that's like saying, if we anally rape everybody, there are economic benefits. Because, I mean, you hire people to anally rape people. And so you're giving them jobs. So there's more money floating around the economy. So there are economic benefits to anally raping people. Therefore, we must anally rape people. And what is the conspiracy about the elders of Zion? And it says it wants to make other people impure. So he thinks he's making Muslims more pure and more civil if they female genitally mutilate women. The irony of that. Like, I know, we have to be civilized here. Come on. Now give me a sharp object. I'm going to cut off her clit. What the fuck? So stupid. Oh, so stupid. Yeah. When people are fundamentalists, the logic's out the window, and you work backwards from your conclusion. So this guy's a fundamentalist. He's working backwards from his conclusion that female genital mutilation is good, and he comes up with all these this twisted logic and just make shit up, and, you know, what's left is just satire and parody for the rest of us, and it would be nothing but funny if it wasn't also incredibly tragic at the same time, because so many people are suffering because idiots like this have this mentality. Okay. All right, let me do the last one. China basically banned the internet from being the internet. New regulations issued by Beijing will prohibit portrayals of homosexuality, prostitution, and drug addiction. The China Netcasting Services Association is targeting what they consider abnormal sexual activity. The rules, which were issued on Friday, demand that online video platforms hire at least 3 professional censors. They were ordered to view entire programs and take down any considered not sticking to the correct political and aesthetic standards, according to the latest regulations. The movie is seen by human rights groups as the latest tightening. The move is seen by human rights groups as the latest tightening of censorship in China. Government officials had closed down celebrity gossip blogs that authorities claim were catering to the public's vulgar taste, according to Channel News Asia. Other online material deemed offensive include damaging the national image, criticizing revolutionary leaders, or portraying the supernatural, such as conjuring spirits. Okay, so basically they banned, like, all of Hollywood. Because they're, okay, no portrayals of homosexuality, prostitution, drug addiction, nothing about national image, you can't criticize leaders, and nothing supernatural. So what the fuck can they say? There's not, like, what's left? What you do is you go online. In China, you go online and you praise the Chinese government. And that's what the whole internet is, just that. Everybody's saying, oh, yes, isn't the government so wonderful? I love them so much in so many ways. I never want them to be overthrown, ever. And they are always looking out for our well-being. Man, don't you love this? Ha ha he 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 he. Yes, let's talk more about how the government is awesome. You know what you're doing? You're sowing the seeds of the opposite. Because now it's so taboo, the other things. People are like, why don't you want us to see the depictions of homosexuality and drug addiction? Criticize the leaders. And you make it more appealing and people go underground and people find a way of communicating in a more free way. So authoritarian governments are just so stupid. Like, they think that manipulating giant swaths of human beings is, like, so easy. Like, well, just ban it. Ban the thing where they say bad things about us and then everything will be good. Like, you really, you're dumb enough to think, like, I got it, that'll work. Tell them they can't do that. Like, that's not going to have any effect in that direction. Oh my God, that's so stupid. But that's what they're doing. And so you have an authoritarian regime, no freedom. Oh, and by the way, hilarious. They're one of our top trading partners. China is. Has anybody ever said, like,
well, dude, come on. They're freedom and democracy. We believe in freedom and democracy. And these guys don't believe in freedom and democracy. We're going to have to do sanctions on them.
Nobody says that, right? So why is it they do say that when it comes to Iran, when it comes to Cuba?
Oh, Cuba. They're not free. That's why we got to have an embargo against them.
China, this sounds like freedom to you? Why is there no embargo against them? Because business as usual overrides everything. So they may be a shitty regime, but you know what? Hey, we got economic deals with them, and we're going to overlook everything. Same reason why we're in bed with Israel. Same reason why we're in bed with Saudi Arabia. If you're our ally, you get to do whatever you want, and we're still going to call it freedom. If you're our enemy, Iran, Cuba, you could, even if you do something right, Cuba invented a lung cancer vaccine.
We're like, no, we're still not going to do a deal with you where we bring in the vaccine or anything, because that makes sense, and you can't do anything right because you're our enemy.
It's like high school cliques, but it's governments on the world stage. It's embarrassing and it's silly. Okay, out of time, guys. Love you, baby, and we'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Peace. Mwah.